Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on science in the Scripture when we come back. You know, in Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question. It says, "By what way is it that the light is parted?" Or if it was paraphrased, it says, "By what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated?" Now, can you imagine asking that question 4,000 years ago? Now, it is, of course, a simple question to be asked and answered today, and any student would instantly answer by passing it through the prism of a spectroscope. But who could have known that 4,000 years ago back in Job's day? And since it is manifestly impossible for any human mind to frame a question that the mind knows nothing of, we're looking at a greater mind here than Job. Now, when we heat a metal red hot, or when we heat any substance until it is incandescent, it gives forth rays of light. These rays, after passing through the spectroscope, divide themselves on the graph according to the content of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us here on planet Earth from some far-flung star out in the heavens, we need only to pass that light ray through the spectroscope to see what the composition of that star is and the proportion of each of its ingredients. Now, this division of light rays is always constant. It doesn't vary in the least particular. We may always rely upon its results. Spectroscopic analysis is an exact science, and this is the manner by which the light is apportioned. This places us in a quandary. Now, either Job knew this, or there is a supernatural wisdom being revealed here in the book of Job. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. And it's one of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine. Send an email request for that free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of science in the Scripture, the 6 days of creation, the science behind the 6 days of creation. And I told you about Kent Hovind and Carl Baugh. I'll tell you about a third guy over here that I think you'll find pretty fascinating. And I said when I started the series, I said, you know, we ought to be able to prove the 6 days of creation. Not just bash evolutionists and say, oh, you guys are all stupid, but rather to look at it scientifically and pragmatically and take each and every statement, each and every argument, and prove it one way or the other. In fact, that's what the Bible tells you to do. Did you know that? Did you know that the Bible tells you to prove all things and hold fast that which is good? Evolution tells you just believe. Yes, just believe in the blind faith of evolutionary philosophy. We will tell you of our theories and hypotheses. Theories and hypotheses that we can't demonstrate, that we can't prove, that violate every known law of science that we can taste, touch, smell, weigh, see, feel, hear, and believe just believe. And then we pay thousands of dollars to go to these colleges and universities to get pieces of paper that say, now that I believe this evolutionary philosophy, I am smart. I've got letters after my name. Well, there are a lot of people that have letters after their name that are pretty smart people. Dr. Carl Baugh is one of them. I think Dr. Kent Hovind is another. But there's a third guy over here that I think you should be aware of. He's an old guy. He wrote a book called The Harmony of Science and Scripture back in 1936. And after all, when we're talking about Genesis 1 and 2, we're talking about origins. When we talk about evolution, we're talking origin here. Origin. Now, origins are inherently impossible to prove. That's why I said, I think we need to prove Genesis 1 and 2. Inherently, it's impossible, but it's not impossible to prove. We can prove that. You can come to a conclusion. You know, we go to court and we present things called evidence and exhibits. You know, we put evidence and exhibits. We take testimony from people. Sometimes it's expert testimony, and we arrive at a conclusion. We come to a conclusion, we say, okay, well, our reason, our logic, and our common sense leads us to this belief, this conclusion, that when we get through talking about all this, we have to be able to come up with an answer. Well, Dr. Harry Rimmer, you might want to write this down. It's called The Harmony of Science and Scripture. Harry Rimmer, R-I-M-M-E-R, written in 1936, published by Erdman's Publishing Company. You'll have to get it. It'll be a used book. You'll have to get it off the Internet over here. There's a little system for doing that. I'm not going to get into that today. But if you want to know, just call the law school and tell us, how do you get that book, Harmony of Science and Scripture, and we'll tell you over the telephone. Well, after a particular lecture, Dr. Rimmer was approached by a young student who desired to enter into a discussion concerning origins. This young inquirer began by saying, I would like to talk to you in the language of science. I would like to talk to you in the language of science, he said. And in this interview, I hope we can confine ourselves to scientific facts and language and get to the bottom of this question that I desire to ask of you. Now, of course, I was more than willing to meet this young man upon his chosen grounds. My early days in the study of medicine were spent learning double-jointed, 12-cylinder knee-action words, and I felt that if he wanted to speak exclusively in the weird and compound verbiage of science, that I should be happy to accommodate this young man. And I felt that the discussion promised much in the way of results. Now, the young man opened his conversation by saying, where did the world come from? To this question, I replied, now let us be scientific, young man. What do you mean by the word world? Do you mean this planet, this solar system, the sidereal system, the universe, the cosmos, or just exactly what is it that you're asking? Well, in some surprise, the boy hesitated, and then with an embarrassed smile replied with an expressive wave of his hands, I mean the whole blame shoot and match. So I laughed and I said, well, that's not scientific, son. But it is very clear. You wish to know where the cosmos came from. And he said, all right, if that's the word I want, where did the cosmos come from? And I said, it was created. The boy responded by asking, by whom or by what was the cosmos created? And I said, by God. And he responded to me and said, who or what is God? So I looked at him closely to be sure that he was really in earnest with his question, and I saw at least that he thought, that he was thinking. And even that attitude on the part of a student is an attitude to be encouraged. So I answered, God is the deity who made all things. You may call him first cause. Or you may use the word logos or personified power or whatever else you wish. The point is, behind the appearance of the cosmos, there remains a person who is the author of all created things, and he is and has life inherent in himself. Well, all right, the young man said. We will pass that for a moment, and let me ask you this. Who made God? So I responded, nobody made God. And the young man said, you are not being scientific in your language. And I said that God was life inherent. In the universe, there are but two types of life. Creature life is life that is transmitted. The life of deity is life that is inherent, thus establishing by existence per se a creator. So I said that he was self-existent and that there is no other term for an infinity that is personified, that is more expressive than inherent life being. God always was, for there could be no beginning to deity. The young man said, oh, come. I can't accept that, you know. It is not scientific. So I said, well, I'm sorry that you can't see that, but that's the best that I can do. But now, let me ask you the same question, to which I would also like you to answer me in scientific terms. Where do you think that the cosmos came from? And the young man said, it was evolved. So I asked, evolved out of what? And the young man said, it was evolved out of a nebulous mass of gaseous matter. Well, fortunately, I had read the same textbook. And so I was prepared to ask, well, young man, where did this nebulous mass of gaseous matter come from? Now, the young man frowned in puzzlement. And he said, well, I guess you would say that it was created. And I said, well, I'm through talking now. Where do you say that it came from? And the young man said, well, I will concede that the original mass of vapor was created. To which I responded, well, by whom? Or by what was it created? And he said to me, by nature. And I said, well, very well then. Who or what is nature? The young man hesitated for a moment and he said, well, you know, nature is the, by nature we mean, well, what we mean when we say nature. And I said, well, I'm afraid that that's not very scientific, son, nor are you being very clear. I do not know nature. Can you tell me? Just who is nature? And the young man responded, well, nature is the first cause of everything. It is the primary beginning. And then I asked, well, then who made nature? And when did nature begin? The young man flung open his arms in despair at my stupidity. And he said, nobody made nature. Nature always was. So I laughed and I said, well, I'm sorry, son. I cannot accept that. That is not scientific. And it was there that we parted company. Both of us having been talking about the same identical person or the same force under two different names. Now, the man who thinks his way through the mechanics of creation will find behind all of created matter a personified being of intelligence and power. Now, most of us refer to this intelligence and this power as God. Now, the man who is content to be superficial and only dimly grasp at the appearance of reason behind matter is content to say nature and then pass it on. Unfortunately, in such discussions as this foregoing discussion that I have just related to you, there is a very vital law of logic here that is being disregarded or violated. As Dr. Harris Gregg has so thoughtfully reasoned, it is simple and profitable. It is a simple and profitable matter, rather, to discuss problems of origin with any person who has in his philosophy the logic of an A and a Z. And by A we mean that is the point beyond which a man's mind cannot reason in that direction of beginnings any further. And we have to start with something. So whatever it is that we start with is our A. The Z in the alphabet of logic is that point in the future beyond which the human mind cannot travel with clarity. And we have to stop somewhere. And the stopping point is our Z. So the beginning point is A, beyond which we cannot go any further back, and Z is that ending point beyond which we can go no further into the future. Now, it is totally impossible to have a logical discussion without first announcing the A and the Z in the context of our discussion. And it is only possible to think in a straight line if we think between two objectives. The man who seeks to reason with an A and a Z in the alphabet of his logic reminds me of a playful Airedale dog who for many years was our faithful companion and friend. This dog was very fond of exercise and fun, and if there was nobody around to play with, he had a game that he played in solitude. He would start after his tail and go around in a circle, like a man reasoning with no A and no Z. Now, the dog, however, had one advantage. As he went around in these endless circles, he was very careful to keep his end in view. The man, however, who reasons this way has no end to keep in view, and his mental exercise is more fruitless than the physical exercise of a dog chasing his tail. So this writer would be careful to announce that as he begins on his pilgrimage of philosophical reasoning, he begins with God. And then when he has thought as far back in the nebulous dimness of the beginning of all things, as far back as a man's mind can feel its way, he starts with a God already existent, unlimited in power. Back of God we cannot go. Only God could reveal, and has not done so. Now, of course, we cannot think before Him who is infinite and eternal. In our philosophy, He is the very start of timeless age and eternal beginnings. God is the beginning because I was not there to make any observations myself. So when we have journeyed as far back, as far down that vista of the past as the human mind can go, we begin with God. And when we have journeyed as far down the vista into the future as the human mind can imagine, we end with God. The human mind can only stagger on in its questing way as far into the coming eternity as it can envision God. So in our philosophy, deity is the beginning and the end for us. It is our alpha and omega. It is the starting point and the termination as well. Having then settled, for the sake of clarity, the fact that we must in logic begin with God, we will turn to the realm of logic and science to see if this person that we call God can be demonstrated by independent external evidence. External evidence. So the first fundamental is this, that God is a person. The fact of deity is universally conceded by all save the fool who has said in his heart that there is no God. Now that's a quotation from the Bible. This fellow who wrote Genesis 1 and 2 and told us about the creation, this person, whoever this is, God, Logos, Lagos, or whatever you want to call him, Allah, Jesus, you know, first cause, nature, you know, just whatever you want to hang a label on, says in the scripture that only the fool has said in his heart. Not talking about that muscle pumping blood now in your mind, in your heart. There is no God. There is no intelligence that all of this just happened to be here. Now I'm going to pause right there. Where in the Bible, God said that only the fool has said in his heart that there is no God. And I'm going to go to science. And I'm going to demonstrate that for you, boys and girls. And it's called entropy. Entropy. E-N-T-R-O-P-Y. What really does happen as time marches on? Now, you know they tell us that you can go back in time billions and billions of years. All right, let's go back 4 billion years. Now, let's add 4 billion to that. And then let's add another 4 billion to that, and then another 4 billion, and another 4. Let's go back 20 billion years. Can you tell us what was going on 20 billion years ago? Before the Big Bang, before the mass and matter began to expand, and this takes us up to the theory of the oscillating universe. That is that the Big Bang occurs, it expands out, it contracts, comes back down to this little small piece, becomes unstable, it blows up, it expands out again, and this just keeps going back and forth, called the oscillating universe theory. Do you remember what Dr. Rimmer asked this young man? He said, where did that mass and matter come from? And the young man said, well, that was created. Well, who created it? Well, nature created it. Well, who or what is nature? Well, I don't know. All Rimmer is telling you, boys and girls, you can go back in time. I don't care if it's 20 billion years, 20 trillion years, 20 godzillion years in the past. At some point in time, there isn't any A that you can begin from unless somebody reveals it to you. You and I weren't there. We weren't eyewitnesses. We don't know. And so your idea is as good as mine. Now, I'm happy to report to you that I don't know what was going on here 20 billion, 20 trillion, 20 godzillion years ago. I don't know. I'm ignorant. All right, let's carry this out into the future. What's going to happen 20 billion years from now? 20 trillion years from now? 20 godzillion years from now? I'm content to point out to you, I don't know. I don't know. Unless somebody who was here 20 trillion years ago and is going to be here 20 trillion years from now reveals to me the answer to that question. I don't know. And I'm going to take it a step further. Neither do you. And all you've got is your speculation. Here's what I think. Well, okay. You're entitled to your opinions and you're entitled to your speculations and you're entitled to your theories and your hypotheses and all your beliefs. But why don't you label it that? This is my theory. This is my dream. This is my vision. This is my view I don't have any evidence of it, and I can't prove it, but, you know, it's what I think. But that's not what evolution is telling us. They're telling us dogmatically that this is the way this happened, that this is science. And I say it's BS. Now, let me give you the evidence. It's called entropy. Orderly things become disordered. New things get old and break down. Living things age and they wear out. This is called the second law of thermodynamics, and it is one of the most constant laws of nature, or God, or the cosmos, or whatever the hell you want to call it, boys and girls. It is a constant law found everywhere in the universe. It's also referred to as the law of entropy, which represents reality. Reality. Now, the Latin word from which evolution comes literally means an outrolling. Let me tell you that one again. Quote, ANOUT-ROLLING, unquote. It indicates something spiraling from the infinities to all of reality, whatever the hell that means. The word entropy comes from the Greek word meaning in turning. Notice the polarity of difference. Evolution, change outward and upward. Entropy, change inward and downward. They're exact opposites. Evolution means to change outward and upward, and entropy means to change inward and downward. Every energy system in the universe wears out. Stars burn out, galaxies fly apart, energy becomes less and less useful through time. Science is painfully aware of the rigidity of this natural law. The impossibility of the perpetual motion machine verifies the consistent observation that everything in our physical universe is running down. The first law, energy is conserved. The first law of thermodynamics says this: all existing processes of nature merely change energy from one form to another. In nature, energy is neither created nor destroyed. Matter itself, which is potential atomic energy, is maintained at a constant level. Processes change matter and energy from one form to another, but the total quantity of energy in the universe always remains the same. Second law of thermodynamics says, as processes in nature occur, the total energy reservoir is reduced to simpler forms with a consequent increase in what has been termed entropy. As energy is used, it becomes less available for further use. Part of the energy spent to produce something is always lost by radiation, friction, or other effects. It becomes non-recoverable heat dissipating in space. Ultimately, as things are going, the entire universe will end up being filled with a stagnant mass of low-level heat energy. Now, there's science. That's the laws of thermodynamics. That can be weighed. It can be measured. It can be observed in the laboratory. Now, remember, the definition of evolution, boys and girls, is change outward and upward. And they talk about the creation of stars. No one has ever observed the creation of a star, but we have observed the destruction, the degeneration of stars. Now, if you want to believe in the evolution of stars that nobody has ever seen, and that violates these two basic laws of thermodynamics, hey, listen, be my guest. Get on with your life. Believe it. But what we observe, what we can see, hear, taste, touch, and smell with our five senses tells us that the exact opposite is in operation. The exact opposite. That is, entropy is a change inward and downward. That all mass and matter is degenerating into, ultimately, a stagnant mass of low-level energy. That's where it's headed. So this oscillating universe, if you want to believe in Lilliputia and the Land of Oz, you know, have at it. If you want to believe that Columbus discovered America, get with it. You learned it in college and you got letters after your name. Columbus did not discover America. The people who were here when Columbus got here were here before Columbus got here, for crying out loud. They discovered it before Columbus, didn't they? Now, boys and girls, I don't have any letters after my name, but I'm not brain dead. All right, now thermodynamics and the scripture. Let's talk about thermodynamics and the Bible when we come back right after this brief message. You want to remember that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, biblical law, from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. All right, now we're talking about entropy. Entropy, the two laws of thermodynamics. And I mentioned here as we took our break, Columbus didn't discover America. Now, that's what you learned in college. That's what you learned in high school. That's what is taught and it's commonly believed by everybody. Columbus discovered America. Columbus discovered America. Columbus discovered America. If you repeat a lie over and over often enough, people will come to believe it. It's just part of psychology. All right, now with that out of the way, I pointed out to you that there were people here when Columbus got here. Obviously, those people discovered America long before Columbus got here. Furthermore, there were people that were coming across the ocean in ships long before Columbus was ever thought of. Now, there are a lot of lies and deceptions out there. And this common lie, this common deception that is promulgated by evolutionary philosophy is that mass and matter have always existed. That's not true. Scientifically, we can prove that mass and matter are degenerating into energy. That means that mass and matter were created from energy. Now, where did this mass and matter come from? Well, somebody or something or some force had to have turned energy into matter. Put another way, if you walk into a room and there's a clock, you look at the clock and the second hand is going round and round. The question arises, where did that clock come from? Now, the clock is running down. I know, because I keep watching my clock on the wall, and it's, although it's electric, it runs down, and it runs out of battery power. And sometimes I look up at my clock, and the second hand is just quivering. It doesn't move, it just quivers. You know, it doesn't go from 1 second to the next, it just kind of bounces, quick, quiver, quiver, quiver. And that tells me that it's running down. So I run out and I get a new battery and I stick it in my clock and it perks right up. And it goes on for several more months. And then one day I look at my clock and it's just laying there quivering. So I need to ask myself, well, where does the energy come from? Well, it comes from the battery. Well, where does the battery come from? Well, dummy, it comes from the store. Okay, but dummy, where did the store get it? Well, he got it from the Happy Bunny people, you know. Well, where did they get it? I mean, you know, when you go back and you keep asking the question, where'd that come from, where'd that come from, where'd that come from, you know. My clock runs on energy. Whether you wind it up or whether you put a battery in it, you know, where did that energy come from? It had to have a beginning. Now, that's what the laws of thermodynamics tell us. I mean, we can observe this in the laboratory, boys and girls. I mean, this is what science is all about. Science is observation. Science is knowledge. The laws of thermodynamics are scientific. Now, when you come along and you apply evolution here to the laws of thermodynamics, you're entering the realm of philosophy again. That's, you're getting into the realm of stupidity here. Columbus didn't discover America. He might have rediscovered what the Europeans didn't know. But the Europeans knew about America and settled this continent over here at least 2,000 years before Columbus came along. Now, thermodynamics in Scripture. No discovery of true science takes God by surprise, and we should expect that. And in His wisdom, there would be hints of these truths found in the Bible. The first law speaks of a total creation, originally completed and now sustained by God's power. The second law speaks of the curse of decay and death brought on by man's sin and causing an overall degeneration in everything. Now, the sun is shrinking. Now, let me give you an example. Remember our story of the sun is shrinking? The sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century, and scientists have been watching for over 100 years now, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Of course, 5 feet an hour isn't very much when you consider the sun is nearly a million miles in diameter, 840,000 miles. Now, I reported it was 740 here a couple of programs back. I'm looking at some documentation here. It says 840,000 miles. But what are the implications? Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then it totals 1% per millennium. Now, if you believe that the Earth's age is only 6,000 years old, that's no problem. In that length of time, the sun will have shrunk by 6%. But what do you have to contend with if you believe that the sun is billions of years old? Because if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun, because we all believe in uniformitarianism, don't we? But astronomers also admit that stars much larger than the present size of our sun burn hotter and faster than our sun does. From the pure, simple evidence, it is clear that life would have been totally impossible on planet Earth just 1 million years ago. Just this example right here, just this one example shows you conclusively that life on planet Earth could not have existed 1 million years ago, and they tell us that the dinosaurs became extinct 65 million years ago. Hell, I watched The Wizard of Oz. It was an entertaining movie. I loved it. But it's not true, and there's no such thing as a yellow brick road. Now, if you want to believe in the Land of Oz and yellow brick roads, get after it. But that's not where reality is located. And reality does not exist within the walls of our universities and colleges. That's Lalaputia. That's La-La Land, boys and girls. That's not reality there. It's the place for you to go to get a piece of paper and letters that says you're smart so you can get a job with ExxonMobil. But that's not where truth lies. Naturally, it would dissipate, and the time that it would take is measured in thousands of years. And now we're talking about oil. What happens when oil well drillers, when drillers dwell into the earth and they hit an oil pool? They hit a pocket of oil deep down in the earth. Frequently, a gusher goes sprouting into the air because of the tremendous pressure trapped below in these sedimentary rocks. Now, let's think about this for a minute. Even the most dense sedimentary rocks have some degree of porosity. With time, what would happen to all of the oil pressure? You know, you watch Tulsa, didn't you? You know, these movies, you know, where some guy's out here drilling oil well and God, you know, this thing blows off and blows the derrick all to hell and it's really exciting and there's oil squirting up in the air there, you know, for hundreds of feet. Comes out under pressure, doesn't it? Now, there's other oil pools that they drill into and they don't come out under pressure. In fact, they have to pump the oil. Now, why is it that some of these pools are under pressure and some of them aren't? Well, those that aren't under pressure have already leaked off. And those that are under pressure are leaking off. And at some point in time, they are going to disappear. The pressure is going to disappear. Now, up in Prudhoe Bay, when they started drilling up there, they took the oil out and it was under 1,600 pounds pressure. Last time I saw some numbers, it was down to 300 pounds of pressure. That's very important because they've never pumped a barrel of oil out of Prudhoe Bay. Far as I know, they've never pumped a barrel of oil out of Saudi Arabia. It's all coming out under pressure. Now, if that had been there for billions of years, the pressure would have leaked off. If it's been there for a few thousand years, some of the oil pools will have leaked off and some will not have leaked off. But if it's been there long enough, all of it will have leaked off. Now, naturally, this oil pressure would dissipate, and the time that it would take is measured in thousands of years, not millions. Findings have revealed tremendous pressures in very deep wells. If those oil deposits had been there for more than 5,000 years, in some cases there would be no pressure left at all, and that's what we observe. Now, the only objective explanation is that these oil deposits were suddenly and catastrophically encased in these flood-produced layers just a few thousand years ago. And the story behind that comes from Dr. Carl Baugh, who can explain that in graphic detail and scientific language and terminology and document it scientifically. In fact, oil is still being created. In case you didn't know that, oil is still being created to this day. So is coal. It's still being created. In fact, coal can be created in less than 100 years. And Dr. Robert Gentry has done it in a laboratory. That's science. You know, you walk into a national park and you go down into a big cave and some young person down there will say, millions and millions of years ago, the water dripping off of these limestone caves have made these little pinnacles that are hanging down from the ceiling. What these young people that go to college don't know is that in caves it has been measured and you can produce 3-foot long stalactites in 50 years. 3 feet long in 50 years, boys and girls. And it's been done and documented. Though they don't tell you about that. Now, that doesn't mean that some of these stalactites haven't been produced over thousands of years, but it didn't take millions and millions of years. And all you got to do is take the numbers that they give you and just multiply it out. And I don't think anybody ever does that. If you just do the damn arithmetic, boys and girls, you've been to college, you're supposed to be able to add and subtract, aren't you? Do the arithmetic! Like I did here with the sun. I mean, I'm just taking these guys' numbers. This is their hypothesis. This is their story. Now let's go back here to Dr. Rimmer. He says, the first fundamental is that God is a person. And if the fact of deity is universally conceded by all, save the fool who said in his heart that there is no God, this traditional and foundational tenet of all faiths found around the world, in false as well as true philosophy alike, true as well as false religion. Even those who would becloud the issue with nebulous evasions of fact speak of the existence of a deity, even though they postulate it as some ethereal and unknowable force or principle called blind chance. Now, the revelation from Scripture, however, goes right to the heart of the matter with a plain announcement of the most vital fact in the thought of the human race, namely, there is a God who is a person. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. There's no more profound or more scientific statement in the annals of science than that statement in the first 10 words of the Bible. There was, or this was, the reason for the coming of the Messiah. Now, turning then to the realm of science and reason, we see that the basic foundational facts of science might say as to the existence of God, we will appeal to an unvarying law of logic. This law is, begin with a fact that is universally conceded and reason from that fact to your conclusion. So at the start of this investigation, we should ask you, the listener, to grant us a concession. And the only concession that we're asking is, will you concede that the universe does in fact exist? The concession being granted, we will demonstrate each successive step as we press on to the scientific evaluation of the credibility and reality of the existence of God. The concession that we desire is simply this. There is a universe. There is a cosmos. Mass and matter exist. This fact no reasoning mind can deny. The universe is real. The solar system is concrete. The planet on which we live and which is the source and scene of most of our scientific investigation is a stubborn, indisputable, unchanging, irrefutable fact. Now then, beginning with this certainty of the fact of the cosmos, we raise this eternal question. From whence does it come? We do not live in a world made up of a single ball of solid matter. We're part of a marvelous and complex system. Not only does the sun, which is the source of our earthly light, revolve as the nucleus of our solar system, but this system is itself part of a universe. This universe, in turn, is one of many such universes that make up the physical cosmos. We are a tiny but integral part of a complex physical creation. 350 million solar systems are reported with their suns, planets, and satellites in our galaxy, the Milky Way. Then, beyond all of this, the spiral nebulae are seen as silver snails in the garden of God, each of them being so vast in diameter that they are at present beyond the reach of our counting devices. Reason doth then rear her head and cry, here it is, this marvelous and amazing cosmos, from whence did it all come? Well, it is kindergarten logic to reply that you cannot get more out of something than you have previously put in. So we think it will be conceded as a principle that out of nothing you get nothing. And also, out of something you get no more than that thing is able to contain. You cannot take a gallon of milk out of a pint bottle. You cannot put $100 in the bank and take out $1,000. The man who seeks to take out of the bank more than he put in can find himself getting free room and board. Now add to that what Hull of Dartmouth calls the fundamental law of physics. This expresses the case perfectly in scientific terms. This law may be stated in these words. All transformations of matter that result in the production of energy are a result of degeneration, a breaking down from the complex to the simple. And that's it, boys and girls. It's called the two laws of thermodynamics. Those two laws prove that God and intelligence, something, you know, hang a label on it. You want to call it nature? Okay. Call it nature. You know, I'm often amazed by blind chance. When we look at the universe around us, when we look at the stars, you know, and so on, I'm always amazed that blind chance put our Earth at 93 million miles from the sun. If it were further away or closer to, we would either roast or freeze. Isn't it just real fortuitous that it just happens to be the right distance? And isn't it just fortuitous that the days are 24 hours? I mean, if they were 48 hours, can you imagine how cold it would get at night and how hot it would get in the day at 93 million miles from the sun? I mean, just picture it. Life on this planet could not exist with a 48-hour day. Well, not life as we know it. And that's blind chance. And as you look around you at all of the blind chance, millions upon millions of events and occurrences that are attributed to evolution, blind chance, it just happened that way, accidentally. I'm amazed at blind chance, at how blind chance has created with such precision the universe and the world and the biologic forms that we see around us. As an illustration of this unquestionable scientific fact, we would introduce the complex, highly organized material that is called petroleum. This petroleum is put through what is called a cracking process. This process results in the degeneration or breaking down of the original mass into its simpler component ingredients. Out of the complex mass called petroleum, an almost innumerable list of substances will be derived, such as kerosene, benzene, gasoline, grades of lubricating oils, Vaseline, and greases, all produced in the breaking down and the shattering of the amazingly complex structure that we call petroleum. Now, one of these simpler ingredients we call gasoline. This gasoline is introduced into a manifold which gasifies the substance, in which form it is put into the cylinder of an internal combustion engine. This compressed matter is energized by an electrical spark and is further degenerated by an explosion. In the course of its final destruction by flame, power is imparted to the piston of the engine. The exhaust gases are wasted on the atmosphere, and through this process of degeneration, power and motion are created. But the gasoline, the petroleum, disappears. It is transformed into another form of low-level energy. So we have to ask ourselves, boys and girls, who created this petroleum? Or what is the process? It's like looking at the clock on the wall. And we just go back through time. You know, you just keep going back. And pretty soon you have to come up with a creator of the clock, a creator of the battery, a mind with intelligence that put it all together and put it on the wall. And it has to serve a purpose. And indeed, a clock does. Now, nobody comes in here and says, "Oh my God, look at blind chance has put together that clock and hung it on the wall." No, intelligence created that clock and hung it on the wall. And it is creative intelligence that sustains that clock and keeps it functioning by putting batteries in it every so often or winding it up every so often. Left to itself, it will run down and stop functioning. Boys and girls, everything around us has been wound up. And so, of course, the question arises, well, who wound it up? Well, I call the guy that wound it up God. And the Muslims call him Allah. And the evolution calls him blind chance. So whether you call him blind chance or Allah or God, there was an intelligence behind this, and somebody says, who created God? Well, one thing is for certain. God had to create mass and matter. And it was created out of energy, and in the Bible, this guy that I call God says, I created all of that mass and matter, and he says, I am without beginning and I am without end. I am the Alpha and the Omega. Now, the guy tells you as a first-person witness in sworn testimony. And you don't believe him because you went to college and some professor said, well, I don't believe that. But what evidence do you have that it's not true? The laws of thermodynamics testify that it is true. And the laws of thermodynamics are based upon science. The professor in the college said, I don't believe it. And it's based upon my theory of evolution, which is based upon philosophy, which has no evidence whatsoever. Now, I'm not here to change your viewpoints, boys and girls. I'm not here to get you to believe in God. I don't give a rat's ass whether you believe in God or don't believe in God. You can't influence my paycheck one way or the other. Told you before, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. We're just here to explore facts. I'm not even a scientist. Hell, I don't even have letters after my name. Never spent a day in college. But I do know this. Columbus did not discover America. And then I can deduce that from the fact that there were people here that welcomed him ashore, boys and girls. So when you come along here and you tell me that Columbus is the discoverer of America, I sit here and laugh and say, what college did you go to? I mean, you'd have to go to college to come to that kind of a conclusion. Well, I guess you could go to church and come to the same conclusion, because religious people believe the Bible, or they believe in God, or they believe in their religion without ever proving it. And you know, the scripture tells you plainly, prove all things. It doesn't tell you just believe because you have faith. It says, prove all things and hold fast that which is good. I don't think you should believe in evolution. I think you should prove it. I don't think you should believe in creation in Genesis 1 or 2. I think you should prove it. And that's what I've taken the time to do this week. Now, if you want the documentation behind the proof, you want to go to Carl Baugh, Creation Evidences Museum, Glen Rose, Texas. So all you need, just write a letter to Creation Evidences Museum, Glen Rose, Texas. I'll bet you they got a web page. They got a phone number. It's 214-458-9874. Again, that's 214-458-9874. Now, there's one other guy here I'm going to promote. Remember our old buddy? Our old buddy Kent Hovind. You can get to him at telephone number 850-479-3466. Again, that's Kent Hovind, Hovind, 850-479-3466. He's got a web page, dino@drdino.com. That's his email, Dino, D-I-N-O, @drdino.com. Or you can go to www.drdino.com. Remember, it costs less than the price of a lot lizard for a set of these tapes at $100. Now, you can't get any plainer than that, boys and girls, and you can't buy a better set of tapes than these tapes on evolution and special creation. All right, I'm out of time. I got to leave it right there, and we'll be back tomorrow night, same time, same station, with something new. Remember, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. Well, we're just about out of time. We're going to have to leave her right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.